Good evening. I would like to call this evening's Kendall County Board adjourned September meeting for February 2nd, 2021 to order. Roll call, please.
Ms. Sasich?
Present.
Mr. DeBolt?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Present.
Mr. Gangler?
Here.
Ms. Gilmore?
Here.
Mr. Greider?
Here.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Kokel?
Here.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Here.
Ms. Vickers?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. With a quorum being present, may I have a motion to approve the agenda as written?
So moved.
Motion by Kokel, seconded by Sasich. Roll call.
Ms. Sasich?
Yes.
Mr. DeBolt?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Kokel?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
All ayes. Thank you. Special recognition I will reserve for our elected official report, and we recognize our health director and our EMA director. Public comment? We have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Second.
Motion by Kellogg, seconded by Sasich. Roll call.
Mr. DeBolt?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
Mr. Gangler? Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Kokel?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Sasich?
Yes.
All ayes. Thank you. Old business. New business. Elected official reports and other department reports. Health Department, Rayanne.
Health Department is very busy, as you can imagine right now. We have fully moved into Phase 1B, so we're excited to be working with our first responders as well as our adults ages 65 and older, and our educators right now is our top priority in Phase 1B. Our mobile site, we did some moving around of furniture, and the city was gracious enough to knock out a little bit of a wall so we could expand our services over at the Health Department, over at the mobile clinic, and it is fabulous. It's reduced our wait time over there, and our flow is wonderful. We also are working with Lim Dubacek over there, and she is now contracted by the Health Department to help us with volunteer coordination, and that has been a huge asset to our Health Department as well. Just being able to have that coordination and somebody, the one person to focus on the volunteers, just makes the process really move smooth, so we're excited to have her on board as well. And thanks to our elected officials and those that submitted a letter to the state, we have now received 4,000 vaccines additional for this week that we are going to be doing a mass vaccination at the Yorkville High School. We're calling Saturday our Senior Saturday because we are going to be serving all those over the age of 65. And with the Super Bowl being on Sunday, we're calling it Super Educators for Sunday. They're going to come visit us. Both clinics will run 8:30 to 3:30. Again, it'll be about 4,000 vaccines coming in, and we'll repeat that again in 21 days because this vaccination clinic will be using the Pfizer vaccine and not Moderna, which we've been using. So it's a little bit different, but again, it'll be 21 days later. We'll be doing another mass vaccination clinic with these same to get them their second dose. So very excited about all the growth. We get better each day. We get better because of the community support, because of the support from the municipalities, the county, the local and local law enforcement, as well as our sheriff's office. Our facilities has come together, our IT department. It's really, truly a community clinic. It is not anything to do with the health department. It is all the community because we are pulling it together by everyone surrounding us. So kudos to our community. And I think that I know we cannot do this alone. And we've had nothing but pure support, as well as from our high school. So working with Tim Schimpf has been a dream, and his whole team pulling together to help us make these mass vaccination clinics occur. They've been just wonderful to work with and offered a lot of support as far as even any resources. So we have a wonderful team here, and it's woven throughout each community. So any questions on where we're at with mass vacs?
Ms. Gilmore.
For the senior citizens for Saturday, what kind of help are you going to be able to offer to people that don't have a computer or don't have a way to register online?
But right now, they are calling in, and we're taking their name and number, and we're having somebody dedicated to call them back to help them get registered. We realize that that's a barrier, and we're addressing that barrier.
Okay.
So thanks,
Thank
Judy.
You.
Mm-hmm.
What about as far as a drive-through? Is there any sort of drive-through?
Nope. It's all going to be walking through the high school. We have it to where we can maintain social distancing and do two lines down each side and be able to serve those 2,000 people a day and still maintain our social distancing.
Ms. Sessage?
Rayanne, thank you for, you know, for all your efforts in this MaxVax. I'm going to be volunteering on Saturday, and is there still a call and still a need for volunteers?
You know, I would want people to reach out to Lynn and see where she's at. I know she is working very hard, and I know she's very overwhelmed by all of this.
Yeah.
She is doing a fabulous job. That it's the right person to be in the right position. I am sure there's always room for volunteers. And what we have to remember is that this isn't a one-time mass vaccination. This is going to be going on through the end of May at least. And these are also weekly clinics that we host, so the volunteers can be used through those weekly clinics as well. So
it's safe to say that if you at least submit your name and know that you're willing to volunteer either one day or several, that there is a need still.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, and that's really what makes this a community clinic, because we can't do it without the volunteers. Right now, it's very minimal health department staff, and the majority, it is community volunteers.
Yeah, thank you.
Dog?
Yeah, I was just going to, you know, put some numbers to it so people understand the magnitude of this. If you do 3,000 each day with 7 hours, that's seven people every minute that they're going to be vaccinating at the clinic. 2,000? Oh, okay. But either way, that's about five people every minute that are going to get a shot over there. So the magnitude of that, 160 volunteers is what I heard. So you start talking about all those people, all the coordination, everything that Rayanne and her group has done to organize this with the help of Roger and people in Yorkville and all the different Yorkville School District. I mean, I can't say enough after the tour and what you told me about all the things that have been put together and everybody who's helping. So it is a huge event and a community event, and it's kind of overwhelming to think about how everybody's come together. So,
well, and to that point, you know, Rayanne, Lynn Kulik, Jim Jensen, myself, and John Purcell, and Scott was on the phone. We met, has it even been 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks now, over at the health department, and when all this was starting to come together, and we said, you know, let's be the example. There's a lot of waiting around on the state. They're going to give us this or that or whatever. But we said, let's make Kendall County the example of how to do it right. And it hasn't been easy, has it? But it's something that we have pushed hard. And you know, there are volunteers from all over the county. There are people stepping up in so many ways that it's hard to even know where to start with the thank yous and the, you know, who's doing what. It's such a neat thing to see, and it's what we expect in Kendall County. You know, to be able to be a leader, and we're getting noted, because if you look at, we're getting noticed if you look at the number of vaccines that we have had. You know, where it was the first batch, 500 or 350 or something like that. And then it's ramped up to where now we have 4,000 over this weekend and 6,000, I think, total that are coming in. The 2,000 are Moderna, and then another four from Pfizer. So our hope is, you know, now that we have this plan and, you know, the mass vax over the weekend, and I'm glad to hear that you're volunteering, Amy.
Robin
as well. And I'll get to you in a minute, Robin. That'll show the state that, hey, you know, we do have this great plan here in Kendall County. We are committed to getting our residents vaccinated so that we can get back to, you know, our way of life and we're you know, back to normalcy. So my hope is that they're going to look at that and say, you know what, these guys, every time we give them more, they come through, shining through, and they'll just keep giving us more so that we can get this done, you know, soon. So thank you, Rayanne, and everybody who's, and Roger. Just one small thing, seeing the sheriff in the back of the room, it reminds me, each municipality and the sheriff, Montgomery, Oswego, Yorkville, Plano, and the sheriff have taken a day to monitor the parking lot, and you know, they're trading off between them. It shows the cooperation that we have here in Kendall County, and you know how we work so well together. So it's really neat to see all this come together.
I want to mention too, Amy, when you talk about volunteers, you know, to do all these vaccinations, one little barrier we have is like pulling Band-Aids. It sounds so funny, but unpackage Band-Aids out of the wrapper and have them available so a nurse can move more efficiently and just put them right on the vaccination site. And so this morning we delivered 4,500 Band-Aids to Yorkville High School, and their National Honor Society is peeling Band-Aids as we speak for us for this weekend. So it is taking all walks, you know, all people. That's a way that those under 18 can really help us during this time. It looks good on the resume, but again, it's a little idea into this, you know, what is really the community effort behind it. So yeah, I just wanted to share that because that's just another thing that people don't realize that happens, but right. It's so important, and it really helps the efficiency flow of the mass vaccination. So,
thank you, Rayanne. I'm going to Robin. You've been waiting.
Thanks. I just wanted to say I volunteered all day on Thursday, and I know that was probably about a week into the clinic, and I didn't know what to expect when I went, and it was amazing. You know, it was, the flow was done. Everything was figured out, but they were listening to people and feedback throughout the day, and, you know, feedback about more signs, things that would be helpful to people as they're waiting, and listening to that feedback and implementing it. So it was tremendous to do. And I have to say, it was a senior day on Thursday when I was working, and it was so incredibly uplifting to talk to all these seniors who are so excited to be getting the vaccine. So it was just a really bright spot in my week. So kudos to Rayanne and the whole team.
Scott?
A great job, Rayanne, and the entire health department. I was just curious, so would they just call the 553-9100 number if they're not computer savvy? Is that the number that they would call?
Yep, and then we're going to have a special person that they're going to forward those phone calls on to. That way there's one person, because we know we're getting backlogged in phone calls, and we know people are very frustrated with our phone system right now. We are trying. We're being inundated by phone calls, but those people will get through, and we'll get their name down, and we'll be returning phone calls and helping them get registered.
And the other way is just to do it through the questionnaire part then, right? Online form.
Are you talking about setting up an appointment?
Yeah, setting up an appointment.
Are you able to pull that up on the website?
Yeah, it's not a questionnaire form, but it is the portal, and
the
you'll
portal.
See where you can.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, where you can get the vaccine appointment, and I do want to say that, you know, we have 2,000 spots for elders. That's not going to take very long to fill up. I wouldn't be surprised if it's already probably all booked, and that's where there's going to be some frustration. But just remember that we are going to have vaccine supply and vaccine events after this. So if you may not have been able to register to get your vaccine for this weekend, there will be other opportunities.
So they'll just be kind of put in a queue then, like if they don't get in the
if they don't get onto the and get an appointment and have a confirmation emailed back to them, then they're going to have to keep checking our website for new appointments or new events coming available.
Oh, so they'll have to fill out the portal again then if they don't get
They won't even get into the portal because those sites will be booked. It's like registering for almost a concert ticket. You go in, you select the day, the time, and then you fill out all your information. And when you finish filling out all your information, you'll get a confirmation that will have a QR code. And when they come to the site, we're scanning the QR code at every different station. And it makes the process so quick. And then that information actually goes on to the iCare registry, which is the state registry for immunizations. So if they go to the doctor 2 days later, they're not feeling well, the doctor will be able to see exactly what vaccine they got, what lot number, and everything like that. So it's a very smooth system.
And do you know anything about, like, the Jewel Oscos? I think they have it on, well, whatever, the IDPH, Illinois Department of Public Health website. Do you know when that might get started with the...
So I think there's some... Plainfield has got some vaccines already. I keep trying to get onto Jules just to see so we can start referring people there. I haven't seen that they have any shots available yet, and I know Walmart's going to come online soon, so we should be hearing more and more about those. which will just increase the access for people. So we're looking forward to that.
Scott, do you want to show what you have up on the screen, or Rand?
It looks like there are some slots available still on Saturday, and that's obviously the senior day because all the morning ones are already gone.
So they go on to that, click through, and they will click on that. And
you can pretend to click a site if you want to pick an hour. It'll tell you how many are available.
You can look on the screen, too.
First dose.
Yeah, so you just add that to your cart. It's really like ordering a concert ticket. I know our elderly, you know, will have a trouble with that. A lot of people are walking people through it. We've also mentioned it to senior providers, so anybody who's working with seniors can also go on and register people.
Ruben.
Sorry.
Hi, Ray. This is amazing. It really is. Now that you're doing seniors, and I know you've already had senior events, are you seeing any more side effects in seniors than younger people?
But we haven't seen any adverse reactions. It's a little bit more anxiety. They take a little bit longer to come through the line because they have a lot of questions, and when they get in front of a nurse, they have even more questions. So when we had to provide any kind of services to somebody, it's really about their anxiety level and just making sure that they're calm and that they feel comfortable, but no adverse reactions. We haven't had any adverse reactions.
Oh, good.
Brian.
This question, if you have elderly folks that have any type of handicaps, is there accommodations to have somebody help that person in, or is it okay for the family member to bring that person in?
They can either bring the person in or they let us know. They would register regularly, and then we go out to the car and we give the vaccine with them in the car.
Okay, because I know that gymnasium is a good-sized gymnasium, and if they have to walk all the way down and all the way back, you know, on their own, it might be a challenge for them.
Right, and so we would just ask that at the registration table that they, if they have registered for a vaccine, that they let one of us know right away, somebody working there, and we'll grab a nurse and have the nurse go out and do the vaccine in the vehicle so that they're not coming through the line.
Very good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Else for Rand? All right. Thanks, Rand. Appreciate it. Next up, Emergency Management Agency, Roger Benucci, Director Benucci. And I asked him to stop by. We're going to see a little bit of him the next couple of weeks, too. Talk about phase four a little bit and what that means for us. And I think many of us know. But
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah. Good evening, everyone. I'll throw some terms at you. And if I say something that confuses you, I'll tell you how it confuses me, too. Some of these things change with the state pretty quickly and sometimes without explanation. We're in Region 2. You probably know that Kendall and Grundy County are the easternmost part of Region 2, and it sweeps all the way out to the Mississippi. It's kind of a long area. Region 2 entirely is at 5.5% positivity now. So that's the aggregate of everyone. And that's 11 consecutive days under 8%. So that's what got us to phase four. As you recall, and I was thinking back about some of these dates when I was looking them up, the disaster proclamation came on March 9th. You remember that? And then on the 16th, we wound up closing some restaurants, and on the 21st was a stay-at-home order. I don't know about you, but that kind of made me really uneasy when that day came around. I remember I was driving a Jewel around that time, and I just kind of looked outside in the air, which sounds ridiculous, but it was just a creepy feeling. Well, we've come a long way since then. The state then developed phase one through five. I think we've been dreaming about phase five. Phase one was rapidly spreading disease. That's the way the governor looked at that. Phase two was about our flattening the curve. And of course, the goal was to not overload our hospitals, really. I mean, to not overload the ICU beds. That's what it was mainly about. And then phase three was recovery, and we were in phase three for quite a long time. And then these things called mitigations came around, and in my line of work, mitigation means to try to stop something from occurring or to recover from something that occurred that we didn't want. some disaster. Were those mitigations re-implied some of the things like stopping restaurants from serving people indoors and that sort of thing? Well, here we are in phase four, which is revitalization. Doesn't that sound positive? And it pretty much is, because today we can have people come into restaurants. We can have 50% of the room filled up, or 50 people, whichever is the lesser. You can have 10 people in your party going into a restaurant. You can have meetings with groups of people. Youth sports can open back up again with some limitations, 50 spectators, that sort of thing. So we're doing well. How long are we going to be in phase four? That's hard to say. Throughout the state, the governor's IEMA, the Illinois Emergency Management Agency's call with us, all our counties in the state on Friday, has been telling us that the number continues to go down in Illinois. So in Illinois, as an aggregate, is about 5.5% positivity now. So it's getting better every day. So there's light at the end of the tunnel. How long is it going to take? Nobody knows.
Any questions for Roger?
So I'm going to back off sending the sit reps out twice a week. I'm going to send them out once a week on Wednesday. The state has backed off asking me for sit reps every day, so I'm going to do the same thing. So anybody have any questions after today, please let me know.
Well, Leo, and Roger is going to be back next Thursday to present the SOP for EMA.
Yes, the EOP is the most important thing in my life right now.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Roger. Next up, Undersheriff Richardson. His protest sign.
Go team. Good evening. First, I'd like to say kudos to Rayanne and her staff for getting this COVID process and vaccinations going, and really continuing the partnerships that she's had throughout the county. We're there to assist her in any need that she would have, as most every other police agency and pretty much everybody here within the county has is willing to do. So for that, you know, thanks to her for getting this going. Also, secondly, last week we were informed that we passed the Illinois Department of Corrections audit. The board chair and the sheriff were informed of that last week, which was something that we pride ourselves in every year to make sure that we meet those standards and you know, have the best jail that we can. Thirdly, last week the sheriff signed an adoption of shared principles, which was brought forth from the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police and also the Illinois NAACP. With us tonight on the Zoom is the executive director from the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police, Ed Rojecki. It's something that we pride ourselves in. We've previously had these 10 shared principles within our policies and procedures of the sheriff's office. This simply codifies the those principles into one document. And on here it says, now be it therefore resolved, the Kendall County, Illinois Sheriff's Office adopts these same 10 shared principles as their own, and thereby adds its name to the historic agreement between the Illinois NAACP and the Illinois ACP. These are, like I said, 10 principles that we've prided ourselves on previously that have kind of been interwoven into our policies and procedures of the Sheriff's Office. This is just simply puts it on paper in one location. So if you guys have any questions for me or for the executive director, I know that he's on the line. And
yeah. He dropped off.
David?
Yeah, he was on earlier.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, if he wanted to say anything, he'd be welcome to. But
was on there, and I know that they have prided themselves in this with the partnership, and we are too. So
appreciate it. Is there a spot that we can see it that's not on?
Sure.
This
will be posted in our roll call out in the front lobby of the sheriff's office and anywhere else we see fit that needs to be posted. But it was signed by the sheriff on 1/27/2021 into effect. So I'll leave it here for if anybody would like to review it. And if you guys have any questions for me, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Ms. Hessage.
Well, Bobby, thank you so much for coming and talking about this today. And, you know, I know, and I know many of us on this board you know, that have interacted with the sheriff's office and all of you guys know that these principles are applied all the time. You know, when I talked to Dwight about this, when we saw that Yorkville went through it, and he's like, you know, we've done this for so long, and we have no issue codifying it. In fact, that's a really good idea. It makes the public aware that that's what we're already doing, and it just solidifies the fact that we are wanting the public's perception of police officers to be better. So thank you for doing that. Thank you to Dwight for you know, for doing it as well. It's such a simple thing, and yet I think it means so much to so many. So I appreciate it.
Words that are on there are sometimes more powerful when they're put together and people read them in, you know, in order versus, you know, we can talk about it and we can essentially do it every day as police officers. But when the citizens of Kendall County are able to see it really in one document, I think it drives home the importance that the sheriff has to the citizens of this county. So.
Couple.
It is listed on the front page of the sheriff's webpage on the county website as well. If anybody on the line is interested in looking it up, and I've shared it for now on your screen.
Well, and I like the fact that our guys are going to see it. You know, are they going to? Is you going to put it near where you do roll call and things like that, so that every day that they're walking out with their uniform on, they know, and are reminded daily. So that's good. Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other elected official or department reports? Standing committee reports, law, justice, and legislation. May I have a motion to approve the resolution recommending Governor Pritzker veto House Bill 3653?
I'll second it.
By Gilmore, seconded by DeBolt. Judy, did you want to talk about your committee?
Yeah, this went through the Law and Justice Committee, and committee unanimously approved it to come to the county board. We've heard quite a bit about this bill, and I think it's something that we can all agree upon. It's a bad bill, but the resolution itself speaks to the process of how this came about, and I don't know if you want to read it, Mr. Grainer.
If you'd like to, go ahead.
Well, okay. Whereas on January 13th, 2021, the Illinois General Assembly used the final hours of the 101st General Assembly's lame duck session to pass House Bill 3653, a criminal justice reform bill, and whereas the original version of the bill, which is over 600 pages, was introduced approximately 1 week before a vote of the General Assembly and was drafted without meaningful input or support from statewide police and local government organizations. And whereas the final version of the bill, which is approximately 764 pages, was first made available at 3:51 a.m. on January 13th, and whereas the bill was then passed by the Illinois Senate less than an hour later at 4:49 a.m. by a vote of 32-23 with bipartisan opposition, and whereas later that same day, the Illinois House passed the bill by a vote of 60-50 with bipartisan opposition, and whereas there was insufficient time provided for legislators and local officials, elected officials, to review the bill and provide valuable feedback prior to its passage, and whereas meaningful criminal justice reform requires feedback from all stakeholders after a reasonable amount of time is provided for review, and whereas the Kendall County Board believes that the public deserves a government and a legislative process that is transparent, participatory, collaborative, and open. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Kendall County Board that the County of Kendall requests Governor J.B. Pritzker to veto House Bill 3653, and be it further resolved that the county board directs the county administrator to transmit suitable copies of this resolution to the governor, the speaker, minority leader of the House, of the Illinois State House of Representatives, President and Minority Leader of the Illinois State Senate, to all members of the General Assembly representing any portion of Kendall County, and to the Executive Director of Illinois State Association of Counties, United Council, Counties Council of Illinois, and the Illinois Association of the County Board Members and Commissioners.
Thanks, Judy. Any comments, Ms. Sesich?
I've been wrestling with this resolution for a while since we had our LJL meeting. I think we do all agree that, you know, something going through lame duck session is not ideal. I think we agree that, you know, for transparency, there should be discussions and that type of thing. I've talked to Sheriff Baird extensively. I've talked to our state's attorney Weiss. I'm sure I've bothered Mr. Keppel too often. I look at this bill because there's so much in it that is good, and to draw up a resolution that states that we would prefer to veto that bill gives me pause. Today, and I believe Robin was on the phone, and also Sheriff Baird was on a town hall today with the Senator, it's Feigenholz. I used to always call her Feigenholz, but I guess it's Feigenholz, with also several other senators that were involved with the Black Caucus and also the Lake County State's Attorney's Office. They were also able to address many of the questions that we had as far as, you know, why this went through the way it did. They talked about the 30 hours and the 126 days that they spent talking about this particular bill and these particular issues. They had 9 hearings involved, so it did not just pass through willy-nilly like we've sort of all thought. Yes, it went up to the last moment. They were actually changing things. They actually did have police associations and other entities involved with creating this bill. One of my biggest issues was the victims' rights, and because I've worked with Mutual Ground with sexual assault victims and domestic violence victims, I was very concerned about how that affected them in this bill, and my mind was also put at ease with the Lake County State's Attorney talking about the real issues and the real impact with victims in this bill, and that it does give the judiciary, the judges, more say in what happens when they see a violent offender come before their court. It is not based upon money or cash bail like it used to be. It will be more up to the discretion of the judges. So this bill is actually better when we talk about criminal justice reform in that aspect. And because I was on that phone call, and because I've been talking about this with many people that are in law enforcement, I feel better about the bill than I originally did, because it, you know, it bothered me when I thought that this went through too quickly. It bothered me if there was our victims' rights were impeded. So I feel better about that. I feel better about the process that it didn't go through so quickly. And so I would recommend, or I would feel, that we not push this resolution through. I get that, you know, there's 10 of us with our feelings and opinions on it, and that's fine. But, you know, we need to do the work behind it to make sure that what we're doing is the right thing. So that's what I wanted to say about it. I know it's such a touchy subject. I realize that by not doing this or by doing it, it sends a message to the governor or the people that, or the legislation that, you know, or the legislators that pushed this through. I get it. But I am 100% behind our sheriff and our guys that protect us for public safety. And I'm for criminal justice reform as well. So thank you.
Well,
when I ran for this office, the One thing I did mention to the folks in Kendall County that I was pro the Sheriff Department, Police Departments of Kendall County, and to supply them with tools and equipment to do their job to keep everybody safe. And after listening to the conversation that we had here a few weeks back with the sheriff and also the state's attorney, that it could compromise situations that would protect people at their own homes. And so with that in mind, if I'm calling for the police or calling for the sheriff, I would expect them to try to help me where it seems like their hands are tied in different situations with this bill. And so for the citizens of Kendall County, and I understand that there's a lot of study into some of these bills, but if you have a bill that's 700 pages, it's like a Sears catalog, and how would you study that entire bill in this period of time? I don't know for sure. But I stand alongside the police departments in this cause, because it's going to compromise them if some of these things in here get passed. I think they should go back and dissect some of the things that need to come out, keep the positive things in, and come back at a later date.
Brian, is there somebody on the...
I just had an update
Scott?
About the bill, and then I believe Robin has her hand up as well.
I'm going to go with Ms. Vickers first.
I actually forgot to put my hand down, sorry.
Oh, thank you. Go ahead, Scott.
The update on the bill is it still hasn't been sent to the governor's desk. The General Assembly has 30 days to do so. It was passed on January 13th, so they need to have it to the governor by February 12th. And from everything that I've looked into, he's not indicated that he's going to veto it. So just as an update, that's where it's at. And the governor does have 60 days to make a decision once he gets the bill.
Ms. Gilmer.
Well, we've heard sheriff and undersheriff and state's attorney speak about this. I think Mr. Prochaska also. And he did send out an email this afternoon just explaining some of the ramifications for his office. But I think all of us got an email from the Kelly Murray from Illinois Association of County Board Members, where she went over some of the things that have been said about this bill. But just on the subject of elimination of cash bail, this was Republican leader Jim Durkin that spoke about this and said, quote, elimination of cash bail and creating a presumption of individual reconnaissance in this form is misguided and will have an immediate negative effect on public safety. Public safety is the state's greatest responsibility to its citizens above all. And personally, that's the way I feel about our job as county board members too, is public safety is number one. The elimination of cash bail basically says that we respect the honor system for violent criminals and gang members. He went on to say that this bill would make it too easy for courts to allow violent offenders to walk free where they may re-offend, pointing to cases in Cook County and other states where they have also eliminated cash bail. And another item on this same email that I think we ought to consider is many provisions of the bill will hurt police morale, leading some that have reached retirement age to choose retirement over continuing to work. So I think this bill in the middle of the night, or early hours of the morning, I should say, that came across the desks of the legislators did not have support of the criminal justice system. It didn't have the input that should have been put into it. And I think that's what we need to focus on, is the way this bill was brought for a vote. I think it was wrong. So in that respect, I think it's our duty as county board members to speak up about this. This is an important thing. There are implications for all the residents of Illinois, especially our police department, our criminal justice system.
Ms. Flowers. Ms. Sessage.
I agree with Ms. Sessage. These are not just, you know, reforms that have been done overnight. These are not just things that you know, are coming just willy-nilly, as Ms. Sestich put it. These are things that have been coming for years and years and years. These are things that people have thought about and have really put a lot of work into. These reforms need to happen, and I support this bill. I do not support vetoing this bill.
Ms. Sestich.
I want to speak to Ms. Gilmore's comments, and then maybe if Sheriff Baird could come up and talk about the specifics of some of her comments, because, you know, had you guys been on the call today, I think you would have had a different feeling about it. You'd still probably not like the way it went through. I get that. But when you say violent offenders will be allowed to now go free without any repercussions or whatever, that is just simply not true. What this bill does, it takes away the cash bail, it takes the monetary aspect of sentencing, and gives the onus then becomes that of the judge. If a judge sees that there is a violent offender, a violent crime has been committed, it is up to the judge, the burden of proof, to say you cannot get out, you have to be detained in jail. So it's not just, you know, we're getting rid of cash bail, so now all you know, criminals now just suddenly go free. That is just simply not the case. And Sheriff, maybe you can speak to that a little bit, and correct me if I am wrong, because if I'm wrong, I will certainly be like, okay. But that's what I heard on the call today from the state's attorney's office in Lake County.
Sheriff, just this week, they spoke about a violent offender who was released on cash bail in Cook County that killed a young girl. Are you familiar with that case?
I just saw the news article. I briefly read it.
That's an example of, like, right away.
That's cash bail not working. That's a cash bail set for everyone. They get out because they made the bail. Whereas now the judge can say there is no cash bail. You have to be detained. That's what that means. You just said he was let go on cash bail.
Right.
Cash bail doesn't work.
The way that the Lake County State's Attorney did speak to it today, that's Mrs. Sesich is correct with what he had said on that.
Did the Kendall County State's Attorney say that as well?
I have not.
He wasn't
had,
on the call.
He was not on a call to my knowledge, unless you talked to him.
He wasn't speaking anyway.
He didn't speak at it, and I have not read the cash bail. This bill is confusing enough with the use of force. And some of the other language that directly affects my office, I try to stay in my lane and look at the stuff that affects the operation of the sheriff's office and how we deliver the public safety to the public. What happens in the courts now where, you know, the judge will set a cash bail, that's the state's attorney's office recommends what the cash bail should be. That has nothing to do with the sheriff's office.
The state's attorney or the judge?
The state's attorney makes a recommendation normally for cash bail. If there's somebody that goes before the judge, you have the prosecutor, and then you have the defense attorney, usually, and then the state will say we would seek for $100,000 bail for this individual based on these set of circumstances, and then the defense would say, you know, we don't feel that. Sometimes they ask the defendant, you know, how much money can you come up with? And then the judge makes a determination on that. Is that?
Yes, that is generally the way it works. So even now, the judge has discretion as far as how they want to set the bail.
I can't hear.
Right into the mic.
The way it works generally
closer.
Now, as far as.
Got to hear your voice back.
There you go. Sorry, Jim.
As far as bond hearings, the judge, even prior to this bill, still has discretion as far as setting bail, whether to set cash bail to release the defendant on their own recognizances, or when they release them, setting bond conditions of where they can and can't go and things of that nature.
Yeah, so this is not letting criminals just go free. It just is not, and I wish people would stop saying that. It's not true.
Taking one of the tools the judge has discretion about away from him, is that?
No. All it is if you
no,
say...
I, my question wasn't for you. it wasn't.
Okay, I know the answer, so sorry.
I'm not super familiar with the pending bill itself, but just now in keeping in mind, since I'm sitting here with you, I'm on the civil side, not on the criminal side.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Generally, the way the judges now have discretion in setting
right. Okay.
Bond and bond terms.
Thank you. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, that's okay. I get it.
Sheriff,
I speak out all the time.
Has this bill also doesn't allow you to arrest people for traffic stops?
The way that the bill is written, it says traffic offenses.
Traffic offenses. Yeah.
And then it says Class B and Class C misdemeanors are no. You would give them a citation in lieu of custodial arrest. The way that the bill is written. So. I haven't got a determination on, because of the way that it is worded, how traffic will be handled, because it says traffic and then it says and Class B and Class C. So a traffic is a first-time DUI, but I haven't really...
Our state's attorney publicly said that falls under the definition that a DUI does...
Okay. I haven't had specific conversations one-on-one with Eric about that. I'm looking more at the citizen or even the business owner that calls up, the sheriff's office or a police and says, hey, I want this person removed off my property. The way that the law is written now, we cannot physically put them under custodial arrest if they are being cooperative. So if somebody says, okay, give me my ticket, but I'm still not leaving. The way that this law is written, we can't physically arrest them. I conferred that with our state's attorney's office. That's who I get my legal, counsel from. And it also takes away, as long as they take the citation from me, they're not obstructing justice. However, we can no longer arrest someone for resisting or obstructing justice because the first offense we have to be able to arrest them for. So that kind of takes that tool away. Now, resisting, normally when somebody gets charged with resisting arrest, there's a predicating offense that's arrestable because that's usually a physical thing that goes on. Obstruction of justice, that's a little bit different. We ask you to move along. We ask you to move off this person's property, not arrestable offense, and we can't charge for obstruction of justice. So they would receive their citation, and they would have to appear in court within 21 days. So that's where, and then knowing the history of people, they're going to say, well, by gosh, that's my property. I'm going to remove them myself. And then, it could be a recipe for further or new physical violence that may not have happened. We don't normally arrest for that. But it's that threat of arrest that normally we get compliance, they'll move along. I don't even understand why this was in the bill. Because C&B misdemeanors, they're not in our jail now. I don't have one person in jail for a C&B misdemeanor. There could be other offenses, like a felony, but we only have felons in our jail 99% of the time. Maybe an aggravated DUI. Maybe a person will be in there overnight or until bond call for a domestic violence arrest. But that's it. So I don't know why this was in there. And the language is pretty plain. I mean, you can read it and you can see it. It's not really hard. That's the stuff that I can concern, because then we go back and we have a physical altercation that occurred because we couldn't keep the peace when we were there the first time. And that's what this bill does. But I'm not here to argue the merits of it. We're pressing for a trailer bill to get some things changed, but there's been nothing. I don't think they go back in session until February 10th. I believe, something like that. I don't know.
They keep canceling again, so I don't have a firm date.
Yeah, yet. But this was real important to get through in the lame duck session.
In your domestic violence example, he sits in jail overnight, or she, they can go back to the property and sit in a camper or a tent or something out in the yard, and the best you can do is to go back and write a citation and have them appear in court 21 days later?
In that case, it would be different because it's a domestic. There's usually a 72-hour stay away in the bond order, so they can't go back to the property.
On the 73rd hour?
Pardon?
On the 73rd hour?
Well, it would all depend on the conditions of that bond. But if there was nothing
to say...
if there was nothing to say that they couldn't, A lot of times, people are released on their own recognizance from a domestic situation. It depends on their past record, but that happens. And most of the time, we have seen that they don't go back to the property unless it's court ordered to go back to get your personal hygiene stuff or clothes, you know, for your work or work clothes or work tools or something that you would need to for your occupation.
Gilmore, then Mr. DeBolt, and Ms. Sessage.
Sheriff, I want to ask you if you would speak to the effect of this bill, some of the provisions in it, where an officer like yourself or any of your people would be charged with a Class 3 felony for just going about your job, but maybe making an honest mistake of not turning on your camera or something like that. Could you speak to that and then how you think that is going to affect morale and behavior of your officers?
Well, the bill itself is affecting some people. On the office, I had one person come to my office last week on Friday and tell me that him and his wife are going to move. They were contemplating that, but with the passage of this bill, he's going to practice law enforcement in another state. Then was it yesterday? We had a deputy say that he was going to stick around for 2 more years, but he decided he was going to retire now. So there's some effect, but there's also, I just had a conversation with two deputies in the locker room tonight before I came here that, you know, they're gonna ride it out. One's a 20-some-year veteran, and the other one's been on 3 years. But they're going to ride it out. You know, they hope that there's some changes. They love their profession. You know, we're trying to tell them, hey, we hope that there is going to be a trailer bill. That can change some of these things that affect our job specifically. As far as the body camera, that was discussed today on that call, it says knowingly and intentionally. But there's some current concerns with the way the language is written. If they violate the Body Worn Camera Act of the state and departmental policy, which that's kind of interesting how they're going to govern over 1,200 police agencies' body-worn policy, it's a Class 3 felony. I know their intent is to punish officers that would turn their cameras off to hide evidence in a case, and that should happen. I mean, that really should genuinely happen. But the way that it's written, no offense to any attorneys, but they all have their own opinion. No offense, Mr. Chairman. They all have their own opinion on the law, and the way that it is written, I think they could tighten up the language a little better with their exact intent. They were saying that knowingly and willfully is a higher burden of proof than beyond a reasonable doubt today on the call. That's the first time I ever heard that. I was going to talk with Eric about that because beyond a reasonable doubt is a pretty high burden of proof. But I guess knowingly, intentionally is even higher, according to one of the experts today on the call. So there are some concerns about that. I mean, a Class 3 felony is serious. I mean, obviously it's imprisonment. If they intentionally do it, then, yeah, they should be charged. But if it was an honest mistake, if they don't have, this is one of the things, if they knowingly don't have a body-worn camera on, as you notice, I don't have one on tonight, Under Sheriff Richardson doesn't. If something was to happen in here right now and this bill was in place and I didn't have my camera on, somebody comes in and does something and I take law enforcement action, why didn't you have your camera on? I didn't have it on. Okay, you knowingly didn't have it on, right? Okay, so you intentionally didn't put it on before you went to the meeting tonight. Those are things that I worry about.
Yeah.
You know, so that's going to be a big change. I don't mind wearing a camera. In fact, a lot of times when we're out on the street, if you look around on a traffic stop, people are videotaping you with their phones. I don't have a problem with that. There's some other problems in the bill. What's unprofessional police conduct? To be, it's not defined in the bill, to be decertified. That's pretty vague. What's unprofessional police conduct? Somebody uses foul language towards me and I use it back to them. Is that unprofessional of me at that point? I don't know. So Those are all things that are a big concern. These 9 hearings and 30 hours of testimony, I have seen none of it. I've seen none of it online. I'm not questioning it didn't happen, but to see the end bill at that time at 3 in the morning and then it's already passed one chamber when most people were sleeping at 3:30 in the morning, it just, you know, it begs the question. There are some good things in the bill. There's some things that I support in there, especially the decertification process. Is just a couple questions, you know, that I have, because it is designed to get rid of the bad cops. I don't really talk about cash bail. I said I try to stay in my lane.
Yeah.
So I really don't get into that. That would be really a question for the judicial or the state's attorney.
And so, thank you, Sheriff. But I think the resolution itself speaks to the manner in which this bill came about. That, you know, the fact that it was 700 and some pages long and plopped on their desks with what, about 45 minutes of, you know, debate about it, that just isn't right. I don't think, you know, even at the county level, we would do something like that. It's just ridiculous. So that's what this resolution is about, and it's not our, you know, really, we're going to have difference of opinions, I think, just hearing some of the board members speak. But the fact that a bill of this magnitude was put on their desks like that at 3 o'clock in the morning, and also the fact that this bill came about without the input of the criminal justice experts, I think is a reason for us to say this should be vetoed. This isn't right.
Mr. DeBolt.
Yes, this is directed to you, Sheriff. The there's things in the bill that I would agree with, but at the same time, I'm concerned about the citizens of Kendall County. If you're called out to a farm out in the far ends of our county, and there's some stranger sitting next to the tool shed where the farmer went out to get his tractor, he calls you guys to do something about this. You guys go out there. Are you saying you would write a ticket to this man and to get in the car and drive away and leave the guy sitting against the tool shed?
Well, what we would try and do is we would try and do the best job we could with the tools we had. We would try and say, hey, this person doesn't want you on their property anymore. Now what we'll do is we'll go out and say, hey, you're not to be on this property. The owner wants you off. You need to leave. If you're not going to leave, we can arrest you for criminal trespass to real property.
So the way this bill is written, it now ties your hands to be able to help the citizens who are calling for your help.
In that scenario, yes, sir.
So I'll just say a few things. I know Robin's been waiting a little while, but it just is not true that this happened in 45 minutes. It just isn't. I know for Senator Feigenholz said that she's been on in the General Assembly since, I think, 01, and they've been talking about these things since then. It just isn't true that it happened that quickly. It just isn't. And to think that is truly absurd. What happened was at the final hour, they were trying to change some of these things that people were really upset about. I mean, when you talk about, you know, qualified immunity, I mean, those things, when we first saw that, right, Sheriff, it was like, oh, no, like, that's really dangerous. Like, let's not do that. So some of those things were being taken out at the last minute, you know, before they decided to pass this. So it was not at the last minute. And when you look at this 700-page bill, 600 pages of it is all of the old stuff. So really, when you really want to get down to the nitty-gritty of what's truly in that bill, is about 50 to 100 pages. So, you know, it's sort of disingenuous to keep talking about 700 pages given to these our GA an hour to read it. This just is not true. So I know Robin's had her hand up for a while, but I just wish we would stop the misconceptions.
Ms. Vickers, then Ms. Flowers, then Mr. Kokel.
So I had a bunch of different things I was going to comment on. Amy hit on the one about the pages. From my looking through it and talking to other people who have read the entire thing, it's about 70 pages of new. And this is not unusual, because Illinois, apparently, when they're writing laws in the General Assembly, when they're changing a law, they put the entire old law or the old clause in the bill and then say that's no longer valid and put in the new one. So this is not unusual to have these ridiculously silly long bills with the super margins and double spacing and all of that. I spoke to an attorney about the sheriff, and I had talked about the someone trespassing and not being able to write a ticket. And so as I was doing research of that, I spoke to another attorney about that as well. And he said that if this was happening, I used the scenario that the sheriff put in his post, that if someone was on my property and I wanted them to leave and all he could do is write a ticket, that if I felt intimidated, that would be another tool to, you know, get this person arrested. Obviously, I'm not a lawyer and I don't even play one on TV. So I don't know. And I realize that law is open to interpretation, but it was just another angle that I hadn't considered. I think there are a lot of good things in this bill, and I think there are some problems with it. I think a lot of the things in the bill don't apply to fix problems that we don't have in Kendall, because we have that the resolution that Undersheriff spoke about. We already do a lot of these things, and that's why this bill seems so outrageous to us, maybe, because we know what our law enforcement is like here. Unfortunately, that's not true across the state, and so it's trying to fix problems that exist elsewhere, maybe just not in Kendall, because we all know Kendall's the best. So I think that it should continue. But honestly, my biggest issue with this whole resolution is all of the reasons we hear, not all, a lot of the reasons we hear are all of the things wrong with the bill, and yet then we're just asking to veto based on procedure. I would like to see us spend our time writing a resolution on the things we'd like to fix, and by advocating with our legislators and actually making the bill better, rather than doing a bill that just says veto it. So I would like to see Kendall be part of the solution. Thank you.
Sheriff?
Thank you for the comments, Robin. I appreciate that. And I agree with her on the law enforcement we have in Kendall, not just the sheriff's office, but a lot of our neighboring departments. But those are some of those unintended consequences. As far as the example that I gave about criminal trespass to property, it specifically says in the bill that it has to be an obvious threat. It doesn't say it has to be a threat. It says an obvious threat. So there's a reason that the legislators put in the word obvious. So if the person doesn't threaten somebody, I find it hard to believe that they say that they feel that they're threatened when they're passively there. Much like somebody standing around. I mean, if they don't give us enough evidence to make an arrest where it's an obvious threat, and we're going to ask the questions, how did they threaten you? How do you feel threatened? Merely somebody's presence is not threatening. Did they raise their hand at you? Did they threaten you that I'm going to hit you later? Did they say that they're going to harm some member of your family? Those are things that we have to articulate, because if we don't, the officer is going to be the one that's going to be sued, and you guys are going to be paying the bill. And we can't fabricate stuff. When somebody says they feel threatened in a situation like that, we're going to ask for articulable facts on that, and then we have to document that in the report, and that's going to come up in court. And so it's fine to say that you feel threatened, but they're going to have to articulate how they feel threatened, and their mere presence is not going to cut it in court.
So can I ask you a question, because I don't know. So in Mr. DeBolt's example about a guy standing by his building, as a woman and at night, that would feel intimidating to me, whether he said anything or not. If he's told to leave and he won't, out in the country in the dark, you know, with just a yard light, that would feel intimidating to me. So this is where it's the law part that I don't know, but it seems like that could be construed as intimidation.
Ms. Flowers?
My comment is, there's been a lot of talk about the speed at which this is being done, and how that's not how we legislate, but this board in particular is not any stranger to making snap decisions that affect the budgets and the people of this county. So I think that we in particular know how snap decisions can be made, and this bill should be going forward.
Mr. Kokel.
But I'll just make it quick. I do support this resolution. I talked with the undersheriff and Sheriff Baird about this, and I didn't have the purview to be on the phone call today with Ms. Sesich and Ms. Vickers, but I will say I probably do agree with Ms. Sesich that they didn't do this in 45 minutes. They've been working on it since 01, but they didn't get anything done until 4 in the morning on whatever day. But I think a lot of things in this bill are kind of an intimidation towards police officers and them doing their job properly and safely. And I'm not going to go into any examples, but I don't think any of us want to feel unsafe at our property, whether it's Mr. DeBolt out in the country by a building or myself over in the east part of the county. So I agree with Amy that, you know, they've been working on this since 01, and maybe they did take, you know, 19 years, 60 days, or 45 minutes. The time doesn't matter. It's what's in the meat of this bill. And I support local law enforcement personally, and I think we need to get behind them. We've been in three meetings where the local law enforcement, our sheriff, and the state's attorney's office supports this. And I'm going to stand by them for the public safety of people in Kendall County. Thank you.
Roll call.
Can I say one thing? Sorry, I had my hand up.
Ms. Vickers.
I just have to say I resent the fact or the implication that because some of us are not in favor of this resolution that we are not supporting our local law enforcement. That could not be farther from the truth, and I believe that the sheriff and undersheriff and the deputies would agree with me on that.
Roll call.
Ms. Flowers?
I can't hear. No.
Mr. Gangler?
Yes.
Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Kokel?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
No.
Ms. Sesich?
No.
Mr. DeBolt?
Yes.
Seven to three.
Thank you. Motion carries. Jesus. Special committee reports, Juvenile Justice Council. Ms. Gilmore.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Juvenile Justice Council met on January 26th, and at that meeting, it was reported that the Sky race that was held last September, the profit was $11,337, and that money is used to support youth groups in Kendall County that in the various high schools at also is used to support two scholarships and to support truancy programs in the schools. And I also want to report that the next Sky race is going to be held at Hoover on September 25th.
Are we being asked to sponsor this year?
We will be. Not yet.
All right.
You can save up your money.
Thank you. Other business?
Can I make a message? We have e-pay for our dogs and cats, rabies tags. I think Mr. Keppel is going to pull that up. He sent out a press release, so I know you guys probably all saw that already, but I did want to reemphasize the fact that we can now pay for our rabies tags online. Years in the making, and thanks to my Animal Control Committee for being positive about that, I just wanted to make an announcement about it. I think Mr. Keppel there is pulling it up online. It's really simple to do. We've been asked about it for years, and here it is, 2021, and we can now do it online. So wanted to kind of commend our animal control for that.
Chairman's report, nothing additional to what we've already discussed. Public comment?
Mr. Chairman, just really quickly, there was a question about the General Assembly. They are going to meet, the House is going to meet on February 10th to set rules. Speaker Welch has canceled the rest of February. The Senate is scheduled to meet February 9th to the 11th, although that will likely be canceled as well.
Thank you. Public comment? Questions from the press? Is there a need for executive session? Motion to adjourn. Motion by Kellogg, seconded by Kokol. Roll call.
Mr. Gangler? Ms. Gilmore?
Yes.
Mr. Greider?
Yes.
Mr. Kellogg?
Yes.
Mr. Kokol?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Ms. Vickers?
Yes.
Ms. Essich?
Yes.
Mr. DeBolt?
Yes.
Ms. Flowers?
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you.